This is SEN's On The Clock podcast with Matt Granlund and inside football draft analyst Brett Anderson.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to our podcast for another week. Brett Anderson is with me. Good to see you, Brett.
Hey, mate. Good guest this week too. Very excited to talk to our guest who we're going to introduce in a minute.
Well, do you want to introduce him right now? Because he's been in the game for a long time, part of the football industry, and a very important part of the football industry as well.
Certainly. We've got Ian Kite from the Calder Cannons, who's the talent manager out there. He's been a Calder for quite a while now, but good to have you with us, Kitey.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks, Maddie.
Mate, what goes into your job as a talent manager at Attack Cup Club and sort of the challenges that you face at the moment?
The challenges of making sure that you give every kid a decent opportunity to show where they are capable of going to the next level or not. Now we've got private school footy, ACC footy in the middle of the week, which makes it hard to play the kids again on a weekend. You've got father-son kids, you've got developing tools, do you play your 19-year-old? So there's a lot that goes into thinking about just the team selection on top of everything else that, as you're aware, the week entails.
Yeah, you mentioned about juggling school commitments, and this time of year it's pretty full on when you've got rep footy, you've got school footy, you've got TAC Cup as well. How do you go with kids and also the schools, I guess, with those relationships of trying to make sure the kids aren't being overused?
Geez, I remember back way before you were even at the Dragons when I was down there, that when Slug Jordan was coaching, that he was mortified by the fact that he was going to have 15 changes in round four.
And he would have used some colourful language too.
Occasionally. And it still goes on now. And I was talking to Lenny Villani at Eastern during the week and when we were looking at the Metro game. And they, the other week, had 23 to pick from because of Metro commitments, because of private school commitments. So it's balancing that. Yeah, there is a buy and you might get a couple back in, from APS or AGS. But then when you've got the ACC kids as well, but if they play Wednesday and they're playing with you on a Saturday, they can conceivably play five games in 14 days. And it tends to be the us that try and manage their time on ground and their workload and make sure that they're not playing too much football. And it's an interesting one to try and manage from a perspective of, you know, are they going to be ready as an 18-year-old? You know, they can probably do all that, but then 5 years down the track, are they still going to be able to play footy?
Ian Kite is with us, talent manager of the Calder Cannons. Ian, just take us right back from the start for a player, right? How you identify a player. Let's say a player is playing Auskick. Let's say that's where he starts, okay? And then his pathway all the way through to getting to play for the Calder Cannons or any of these other under-18 teams.
I think we all operate pretty much the same across the region. So we start looking at them around 13, 14 and have a day where we invite 130 14-year-olds in. So they'll come in, and all of them come in and sit on the floor in front of you and think they're the ones that are going to be drafted. And out of that group that comes in, there's probably only two that are going to be drafted, and they're all sitting there thinking, I wonder who the other one is. And as we go through as 14, 15, 16, 17, the other kids will go past them and they'll drop off. So on average, we're a bit above 4.5, I think, the Cannons per year of kids drafted. And they come and go in the program. This year we've got about 26 kids in our TAC Cup program that never went through the Elite 16s program that we run. So it's finding those kids that come in as 19-year-olds. This year, like maybe Ben Ronk, and we've got a basketballer, Mitch Barnes, that hasn't played for footy for 7 years that we're trying to educate as much as we can. So these kids that come into the program for the first time, they're a little bit disadvantaged because they haven't had that 16s pre-season and are under the coaching of some really good coaches. Chris Johnson did ours this year. Then a 17s pre-season, but then coming through the elite program. So we cut it down, going back a step, probably 130, 14, get down to 75 and 55, split them up into nearly A and B squads in the 15s and looking at them. Then from there, we take about 40 into the 16s program and this year 53 in the TAC Cup program with a mixture of 17s, 18s, 19s.
I want to ask you this question, Ian, which I think would probably be different to the different people you ask who deal with a lot of kids, and that is, at what age do you think you can identify a kid has got something, right? Because, you know, you look at EPL and, you know, some people over there say you can see it at 6 and 7 and really early. When do you think, Ian, having worked with kids for so long, do you think, this kid's got something? He's got a good hand-eye coordination. He stands out from the others.
I reckon at 13 or 14, you can really get a good gauge on it. And in some cases, some of the kids develop earlier in body size, and they're men by the time they're 14 or 15. They might be 184, 185 playing in a ruck in an under-14, under-15 game. And they finish up not making it as a small back or a small forward because they don't grow anymore. So we never rule anybody out. And Zach Guthrie playing with us this year is a perfect example. As a 14, 15-year-old when he came to us, he was 158 and 54 kilos, and he's now 185 and 71, 72, and been in our best three players the last 8 weeks in the TOC Cup. So you keep watching the kids, you know. The things that we probably concentrate on are, can they win their own ball? Can they kick? And can they show some game sense in a game? And it's the same process as now, and it's very topical, that we're applying to the girls' footy.
I spoke about this a few weeks ago, Kitey. I just get frustrated going to junior games and even pathway games and seeing the amount of kids who can't kick the footy or can't make good decisions, and basically talking about junior coaches and the way that they're probably over-coaching their kids. Do you find that as a talent manager that you watch some junior footy, whether it be 15s or 16s, and there's coaches that are employing floods and zones and things like that they've seen on TV, but they've sort of missed the basics of what ultimately will help a player get drafted, and that's A, kicking and decision-making?
Yeah, I think there's two distinct games that we have. We have AFL football and we have footy. I want the kids to play footy. TAC Cup plays more footy because of the high density rule.
Yep.
But you go and watch, I go and watch a little bit of local senior football and quite a bit of local junior football. And even the school footy, we had a game here yesterday at Rams Arena, and they were flooding in the game. He was telling them to push up, get up at the back of stoppages and push up and flood up. And it just, in school footy, local footy, when you see that, it just frustrates me because you don't get a real look at the kids that are playing. They don't get to showcase themselves. So local senior footy doing it. We've even got some 17, 18-year-olds that are listed or close to being listed this year that we're keeping an eye on playing senior footy. And I don't think you see them at their highest level. I want them to play footy so we can recognise them. The AFL football is a different brand of football to what a lot of the local footy is played like.
Ian, with these kids that you've got at Calder, you roll them to, obviously you're coaching them and you're hoping that they get drafted. What about selling these kids to some of the recruiters? Is that a job that you have as well? I mean, is there is that part of your job description where you're liaising? Obviously, you're talking to recruiters from these AFL clubs a lot, but is there a salesman there as well?
I don't think, Matty, it's so much a salesman. I think it's more being honest with them. And if we've got a kid that has draftable qualities, but he's not a real good kid off the ground, then I'm going to make sure that I make them perfectly clear as to what they're going to take. So it's got to be that they know everything about the kid. I don't want to go and sell a kid. I reckon in the beginning days, back in the early 90s, where it was get as many as you can draft and let them sort the kids out once they got there. But now their knowledge of the kid has to be everything. You know, they talk about $250,000 as soon as they call out a name, investment in them per year. Then, and I suppose it's part of our as talent managers' reputations and that we can't go selling a kid that's not going to perform at a level that we've told them they're going to. So I reckon we have to be extremely careful and make sure that, you know, they get at warts and all exactly what the kid can do, you know, whether his pace is questionable or whether, you know, he's got a weird ball drop that we're trying to fix but we're having trouble with it. You need to be aware of that. So it's not only... I don't think our jobs are only to get as many kids drafted as we possibly can. I think they're to provide the right kids for draft. And a region, if we got no people drafted this year and Sandringham got 7, I wouldn't regard their talent managers having done his job better than me, or if it was the reverse of that, me doing better than him, because I think we all do the same job, go through our regions and find all the kids that we possibly can and may have a chance to get drafted. And it's also proving to the AFL recruiters that these kids aren't capable of being drafted as part of our job as well. and then turning them into VFL players. You know, the recognition we get for that isn't extremely high. Turning them into local league, EDFL, RDFL, really good players who might become the coaches of the next, well, 10 years down the track, the TAC players that are coming through. They might educate them. You know, it even goes back to the staff that are going through that go back out to local footy and take some TAC Cup development mentality out there with them and help these kids become better players before they get here and help them be educated. So I think there's a lot of areas that we do that we probably don't get enough credit for.
Guy, you touched on women's footy before, and obviously it's topical at the moment in terms of the new women's league opening up. Calder's had quite an association with women's footy and girls' footy over the last few years and have been a bit of a trailblazer, I guess, in terms of their academy setup. Take us through what you've done in the past and now what you're doing into the future with the girls' footy.
It started with one academy, Victorian Academy, and they started it here because of the facility we had and the availability of ground and change rooms, etc., for the girls to go. It then split to Metro and Country, and we had the Metro one here, and then it split. I think the first one was two, us and Sandringham, and then it went to four, last year six, and now next year us taking over the Youth Girls Academy, being run by the TAC Cup talent manager in the region. There's a few new ones that are jumping out. Eastern and Northern will also be added this year. So what we'll do with that is to run an 18, 17 and 16s, effectively a TAC Cup squad where they're training twice a week. But 15s, 14s, more a development squad like we do with our 15s, where they'll train once a week, three or four times before Christmas and 10 after Christmas and get one game in. So we want to model it on that and want to have some crossover between the boys and girls training where they can see what they want to do. And there is a pathway for the girls now, and that's what some of, I suppose, their parents have got to realise, that especially with yesterday's announcement of becoming very public and in everybody's face, which is fantastic for the women's footy, that we now have a pathway from under 12 girls right through to senior football. And in 10 years' time, some of these women are going to be earning $80,000, $100,000 a year maybe and making a living out of it. And the girls that we've got now are going to be the ones that are going to benefit.
Ian Kite is with us, talent manager of the Calder Cannons. And we're going to give you a few quick ones just to finish up. And you've been involved in under-18s for a long time now. Here's the first question. The best player as a junior you've seen come through your system?
Chris Judd. If I can tell you a quick story, they wanted to see him playing Metro 16s, and it was a game at Oakley, and he played school footy, and I said, just put him in the squad, don't worry about him. He's just got to go in. And Leon Harris was coaching Country at that stage, and I was the runner for Vic Metro, so David Dixon, I think. And Mork had got me to talk about a couple of the Metro kids to him, because I think at that stage one of his kids was down around the Dragons program. And Jody got stuck in a lift the morning of the game against Vic Country, and he was in there with a kid from the Northern Knights who was claustrophobic, who had to have his hand held, and Jody just ordered his breakfast to be handed in. Came out and had a dozen possessions, kicked a couple of freak goals in the first quarter, and we're up 10 goals to none. Mork ran down the race screaming at me, "You so-and-so, you didn't tell me about Judd. How come you didn't tell me about him?" And that was when, I think, the first time ever as a 16-year-old he showed just that, you know, he had the knack of running along with the ball, looking over his shoulder. If he had to run quicker, then he would to stay away from the player. And if he had to, he could slow down to keep that metre and a half gap, he would. And I reckon he carried that right through his AFL career.
He's one of the better ones we've seen, certainly, Juddy. Now, your best draft hope for the Cannons this year, you probably don't have the strongest bunch that you've ever had, Cody, but there are some players who have sort of come on through the recent last few weeks, Mohammed Saad being one, and we spoke about Zach Guthrie earlier.
Yeah, I think, you know, Saadi's really pushed himself up. They're going to look at Saadi, the recruiters, and think, well, he might be as good or better than Adam at the same age, and Adam developed where he is now. Why don't we just take him? And we'll do the developing of him instead of him spending 2 years on a VFL list. So one way or the other, I think he could finish up going. Zach Guthrie, coming from nowhere, as we said, wasn't listed last year, was still quite slight and small. Carl Brown wasn't fantastic the other day, but he shows some attributes that AFL clubs are really interested in as a leading forward. He's shown he's prepared to work hard, dropping his weight from 102 to 87 and maintaining most of his strengths. Another one is Blythe, who I think his speed and his ability to jump and intercept mark as a halfback is going to create a fair bit of attention. I thought he was really good the other day in the Metro game.
Just one last one. You told me the best player, right, and it was Chris Judd, obviously, but can you tell us who the best player was that you thought that you were surprised with, geez, he's been drafted, but I don't know about him, and he's turned out to be a star?
I can tell you one that didn't get drafted that I thought should have got drafted and I think could have played a lot of footy, and Brett might remember him, Serhat Temel.
Yep.
He kicked a lot of goals in 2008 and 9 for the Canucks, but his feet was about a 10.5, and he got taken to state screening, and he hardly played any footy once he left here. He finished up as a bouncer in the Retreat nightclub in Brunswick, I think it is, isn't it? Sydney Road, one of your haunts probably again, Brett.
But wouldn't have thought so.
Oh, no, we come from the other side of the arrow, don't we?
I don't go that side of the arrow.
No. But him, a kid that had been drafted, I didn't think was going to be as good as he is. Maybe Dylan Grimes. I had a lot to do with Dylan through family friendships as well. And he was sort of that in-between height and not quite quick enough to play on ball, but he's grown a little bit, and he probably got drafted as about a 190, 191. And in a pre-season draft in the year he went, he didn't go in the November draft. I reckon it was the January, when they used to take January or February, or late December somewhere where they did that draft, but I'm not sure when. But I think he went in that, and he's become a much, much better player than I thought he would be at AFL level.
Well, you've done a sensational job over the years, Ian, and if any kids go through the Calder Cannon system, parents should be well assured they're in great hands. Ian, thanks very much for giving us...
He didn't get me drafted, so I don't know. What are you talking about?
Well, that was a tough task. That would have been a tough task.
Have you heard of that movie Mission Impossible? You would have you were the forerunner of that, I think.
You're in the category heart the size of a pea, I think, Brett. Ian, thanks for joining us, mate, and thanks for giving me some insights. Buddy. Good stuff.
Thanks, Brady.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, before we wrap up, Brett, fantastic chat, Ian Kite. Let's talk about the under-18s from the weekend. We had two games. Take us through the first one over in South Australia.
So SA had another really good win over WA. So the two teams who won in round one faced off on Sunday, and SA came out victorious quite comfortably in the end by 6 or 7 goals. So a really strong win there. Again, Jack Graham was one of the better players. 34 possessions. Another one who I really liked on the weekend and liked a bit last year was Peter Laddams. He plays ruck forward. Did well when he went into the ruck. He had 24 hit-outs opposed to Jeremy Goddard and also Tim English. But his forward craft's actually quite strong as well. So he's one to keep an eye on. And there's probably a few good rucks in the class this year, and he's sort of continuing to add his name to that one. Andrew McPherson's a player for next year from Woodville West Torrens, who had 20 possessions off halfback, who's one to keep your eye on. And also Alex Villas, who we've spoken about a little bit, but he's a classy ball user. He was really strong again. And Ben Jarman is a father-son, obviously, for Adelaide and Hawthorne. Really smart player. He's got his dad's smarts. He's a really good player who had 17 possessions and had a really big impact throughout the day. WA, slim pickings ultimately for them. They were pretty poor. Zach Fisher was pretty good. He's played some senior footy at Perth this year. He had 20 possessions. Cam Zerha was okay. I still don't mind his competitiveness in the front half. And we know we spoke about Sam Pelpepper last week. He had 15 possessions, but he only went at 30% efficiency by foot.
The other one was at Simmons Stadium. Now, I want to talk...
Did you watch this?
I did watch a bit of it. It was on Monday.
Yeah, it was good.
It was a very good game. Now, I want to talk about Collingwood Football Club, and there was an article written by John Ralph.
Yep.
There's two famous names, Brown and Dacos. They might have a difficult decision to make. Brown is the one we're going to talk about because he was featured in that game and featured very prominently. Tell us about the two players.
Callum Brown is obviously Gavin Brown's son. He had 28 possessions on the weekend and really stood up when Vic Metro needed him, along with Andrew McGrath and Daniel Venables at the end. But Callum Brown was a strong performer throughout the day. For me, I think he's a second round pick, maybe a third. So he's one certainly that's on Collingwood's radar. And you mentioned Josh Dacos. Now, he's missing still with a hand injury that he injured a few weeks ago. Likely to potentially be back this week or next week, so we might see him feature as well. But he's one who caught the eye a little bit through the trials and through the start of the year in the TAC Cup. I think they both sort of sit in a similar range, probably Dacos just behind Brown. It's all about points, though. It's not this old system where if you don't have a first-round pick or if you have a first-round pick, you're going to have to decide. I think they're going to have enough points and they'll be able to work out a deal where they're going to have enough to be able to take both players if they so wish. I don't think there's so much of an issue there from Collingwood's point of view.
Other players in that game that caught your eye?
Well, it was a cracking finish, obviously. Venables kicking the goal to win the game in the last sort of minute. So he was good at the very end, but was probably a bit quiet throughout. But a few more for Vic Metro. Andrew McGrath, I think, is looming as potential top 10 pick. from Brighton Grammar. He moved on to Ainsworth and provided a great run out of defence in the last quarter. And his ability to sort of take the game on and break the lines was really impressive. Another one was Jack Scrimshaw, another Sandy boy who is 194 centimetre, can play midfield, but he can also play as a hybrid back and a key back. He's a beautiful left footer. I think if his body can hold together, and that's the big issue with him, is his continuity with his body. He's had some injury issues. He's another one who could push himself right up towards the top 10 mark. And Tim Taranto, another Dragons boy, had 18 possessions, but kicked 3 goals, had a really good outing. Now, for Vic Country, we spoke about a few of their guys last week, but Ben Ainsworth returned to the squad and kicked 4 goals in the third quarter and put his hand up and showed us why he's potentially a top 5 pick. I think he certainly goes in the top 5. You don't have his mix of power, speed, and ability above head for 179 centimetres. That doesn't come along that often when you've got the overall package. I know people will be concerned about taking a small forward that early, but I think he can develop into a midfielder in time. Jared Berry was okay. Got some concerns still about his kicking. And Hugh McCluggage again announced himself potentially as the best player in this class at the end of the year.
All right, that is our podcast done and dusted for another week.
No rumours this week, Matty?
Well, we had a good one last week that you went with and on this podcast. You were the first to go with it, so congratulations. You wanted me to give you a pat on the back.
Hang on, here we go.
There you go. Well done, Brett. Good stuff.
Thanks for everyone listening to our podcast too and picking up on that.
But that, of course, was Michael Hibberd, and Melbourne were interested in him. He was asked on Friday night in the coach's box on SEN, Paul Ruse was, and confirmed it, and then Peter Jackson was asked during the week again on Breakfast with Frank and Ox, and he confirmed that they are definitely in conversation. I think contracted to the end of 2017.
But has yet to commit to the footy club to return, obviously having gone through the wider suspension.
He'd be handy to have as a bit of a mature sort of body down back.
Absolutely, in relationship with Melksham and Goodwin and McCartney there already, and there might be another Essendon player with H who might be involved somewhere there too. Maybe H with an early.
Right.
I think Melbourne would be one of 15 clubs, 16 clubs with some interest in Michael Hurley. It'd be silly if you didn't. But that'll play out, obviously, in due course. But if you want to hear where players are going and rumours and things like that, make sure you tune in each week, because we'll try and give you what we're hearing around the traps.
Okay, we'll talk to you next week.